Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Wednesday, October 27th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? That chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to be able to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each of us has been given access to our insight, intuition, higher wisdom, etc. You can actually download the worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Just click the link, download it, print it off, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through that worksheet process, or they've called in with powerful testimonials about how the active use of that tool has improved the quality of their life and relationships. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, and that'll give you access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do that soon and often, as that frequently leads to comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. And if you have any of the above, give us a call, 563-999-3581, and press 1. Or alternatively, you can send me an email at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. You can also email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org, whyagain.org. And we're also doing the Course in Miracles experiment and the Course in Miracles workbook lessons this year. Today is the 300th day of the year, and today's lesson from the workbook of Course in Miracles reads, "Only an instant does this world endure." The commentary reads, "This is a thought which can be used to say that death and sorrow are the certain lot of all who come here, for their joys are gone before they are possessed or even grasped. Yet this is also the idea that lets no false perception keep us in its hold, nor represent more than a passing cloud upon a sky which is eternally serene. And it is this serenity we seek, unclouded, obvious, and sure today. We seek your holy world today, for we, your loving offspring, have lost our way a little, but we have listened to your voice and learned exactly what to do to be restored to heaven and to our true identity, to our awareness of our true identity. And we give thanks today that the world endures for but an instant, that the world that we perceive full of strife and fear and upset lasts for only an instant. We would go beyond that tiny instant to eternity and awareness of all that is. And Pam Grout's Course in Miracles experiment, lesson number 300, is titled, "You are incredibly precious." She quotes Macrina Wiedeker as saying, "Oh God, help me to believe the truth about myself, no matter how beautiful it is." Pam writes, "Today I find serenity, unclouded, obvious, and sure. Lesson 300 encourages me to let no false perception keep me in its hold." As Macrina, a Benedictine nun from Arkansas, reminds me, "You are incredibly precious. In the sacred moments offered to you each day, robe yourself with that truth. Linger with it in each new moment given to you. And consider how you might bless those you encounter simply because of the truth of who you are. Hold on to your ephemeral staff and memorize these words, 'I am incredibly precious. I am invited today to see myself as I really am, and the truth always astounds.'" So that's our Course in Miracles workbook lesson for today and the Pam Grout commentary. And as usual, we've got about 50 minutes, give or take a couple, to have comments, commentary, questions. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, you can have a conversation with us. We can have a conversation with you. You can assist us in living into our intention with this work. That intention being to be of service. How can we be of service today? What would be useful for you to have us cover in a topic or discuss or process through a worksheet? We had our Tuesday night support group last night, and we listened to the interview at the request of several participants. We listened to the interview I did with Dr. Bradley Nelson, who authored the book Emotion Code, or Emotion Codes, I forget which it is. And then we had discussion about that process, about this very powerful process that he offers in his book. And when you get the book, you're fully equipped to do this process for yourself or for somebody else, or have somebody else do for you. And it's a process that allows the release of trapped emotions, as he calls them. And he says these trapped emotions are basically energy packets, anything from the size of a golf ball to a basketball, trapped in our energy system. And as long as they're trapped there, they do a couple of things. They make it far more easy for us to feel those emotions because they're right there, primed and ready to resonate through us. And they also assist us in reliving past energetic experiences, traumas, etc. So when they get resonated in us, they give us the false impression that something that happened in our past is happening again, when in truth it's just an energy resonating in our system. And he talks about the knowledge of the quantum field and how everything is energy and therefore our bodies are just energy. So it's very much in alignment with what we understand in the Mind Shifters support groups and on Mind Shifter Radio, that what we're doing in this work is clearing out our energy system, is learning to take increasingly more and better responsibility for whatever we experience inside or through the mind-body energy system. And the process that he outlines in the book and the charts that he makes available free for download on his website, and of course they're printed in the book, but they're available if you get his book on Kindle. You can go to his website and download the PDF and print off the charts that enable you to do this work on your own, for yourself or a family member. And when I first read the book years ago, I was delighted because it made it possible for me to share with people a process that's very similar to a couple different processes that I learned, energy medicine pieces that I learned. But those energy medicine pieces I learned were highly proprietary, and they require you to have an outside therapist to administer the process to you. Whereas if you get the emotion code book, you're equipped to do it yourself. There, you know, it's nothing is hidden from you. The charts are there. The explanation of the muscle testing, how to choose the muscle testing process that works best for you, how to do it for yourself, how to do it for somebody else, the questions to ask when you're muscle testing and how to read the answer, the charts for delineating which emotion might be involved and which emotion might be stuck, and the very simple process for releasing that emotion, which is simply moving your fingers or even something as gentle as a refrigerator magnet from your eyebrows up over the center of your head along the center line back down to the base of your skull 3 times with the intention to release any trapped emotion. That is called the governing meridian in the acupuncture system, and it's simply a central meridian that has some level of connection to all the meridians. So whichever emotion you're working with at that time can get released through that very gentle stimulation of that energy meridian. And then, of course, you're coached through the book and through the process to do the muscle testing again and ask the question, did I release the emotion? And is there another emotion I can release? And through this process, people around the world have gotten tremendous relief from trapped emotions. And they find that as the emotions get released, energy is cleared, the energy flows more, and their life works better. And that's essentially what we're doing when we do a reality management worksheet and we cancel our need to be right and to try and hold on to our beliefs about how the world is wrong and has to unfold in a certain way for us to be happy. None of that is true. And we can know that it's false when that belief comes into our mindset and it's accompanied by any negative emotion. The negative emotion is quite literally the demonstration to us that the belief we're holding on to is false. So, in a similar fashion, with the emotion code, anytime I'm having difficulty following through on a task that I think should, you know, be easy for me to do, or I find myself procrastinating, or I find myself in one of the traditional upsets like anxiety or depression, I can choose to pick up a tool like the Emotion Code, just like I can choose to pick up a tool like the Reality Management Worksheet, and explore what is happening inside my energy system that's blocking me from higher functioning, that's blocking me from this direct awareness of my true nature as this blessing that is talked about in the Pam Grout quote from the nun. So that's what we're here to help people do, to do a couple different things. I like to talk about it as a two-prong approach. The one is I want to remind myself that I'm a blessing and that I am I'm grateful for the life, for the experience of life, for being aware of my existence, and I want to take full responsibility anytime a negative emotional experience arises within my mind-body-energy system. And I want to use the tools, whether it's a tool like the Emotion Code or a tool like the Reality Management Worksheet or the Three Early Memories of Conflict or what the targeted journaling that Michael calls the Mind Shifter tool. I want to use a tool to begin dismantling the energies in my system which are not benefiting me, which do not allow me a direct, easy awareness of my true nature. So that's what we're here to do and support you and others in doing. And if you have a comment or a question about that, we'd love to hear it. 563-999-3581. Call that number, press 1, and let us know how we can be of service. Today is Wednesday, so we will not have a support group tonight, but we will have another one tomorrow night. And the possibilities for topics are many and varied. I'm made aware that Guy Finley is getting ready to release another book. I don't find it out anywhere yet, but that's something to look forward to, and perhaps we'll be able to get him to agree to another interview to promote his newest book. And if you have a suggestion of someone we should contact to interview, whether it's an author or someone who's runs a podcast that you listen to that you thoroughly enjoy, or a book you read, even if it's 20 or 30 years ago, but it was a powerful, moving book for you, let us know. I'm still trying to get an agreement from Ronald Bassman, who's a psychologist who was railroaded into a hospital stay and given insulin shock treatments when he was younger and overcame all of that to become a psychologist himself, and he's written a book about, you know, trying to be, the freedom to be, and what it's like on both sides of the locked door of a psychiatric unit. So if you know somebody like that, if you know somebody who's written a book about living with or surviving bipolar disorder or depression or anxiety, give us a call at 563-999-3581 or send me an email at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org and we can have a conversation. Sometimes people ask, well, how do you know what to do a worksheet on? You know, how do I know when it's time for me to do a worksheet and when I should just tough it out and move on with my life and let things go? A lot of times people are told by their friends and family, come on, get over it. Let it go. It's not worth your struggle. And my answer for that is generally when something keeps coming up in my awareness and it's carrying a negative valence, a negative energy, that it used to be that I would push those things away for months or years until they finally broke through in some kind of a major problem. But since I've been working with these tools and gaining knowledge about best practices from the past 17 plus years of doing this work, what I've learned is if I have a negative thought and it just keeps coming back, it doesn't seem to be that upsetting. It's something I can move past, and I can look at it and say, oh, I can see where this person is coming from, and, you know, bless their heart. They're doing the best they can with whatever resources they have, and I think I've moved past it. And then, lo and behold, something happens, and it keeps coming back into conscious awareness. And when it comes back into conscious awareness, I'm not left with this glowing, loving, compassionate, joyful response. There's an irritation, or there's a confusion, or there's a sadness and a longing. And that's when I know I would benefit from doing some actual work. The worksheet process, maybe I need to start with the EFT tapping to get the intensity of the upset down. Maybe I need to do some of the emotion code work. Maybe I need to do some targeted journaling about the topic just to get clear about what are some of the hidden beliefs in my energy system that keep piling up, building up this pressure within me. And, you know, those kinds of recurring negative thoughts can happen from an email. They can happen from the lack of an email response I was anticipating. They can arise in me because the day doesn't unfold the way I want it to. They can arise in me if I'm too tired and I throw an interpretation on a life event that's negative. And because I have the variety of tools, whether it's the EFT tapping or the reality management worksheet or the targeted journaling that Michael calls the mind shifter tool or the emotion codes I can do, because I have this variety of tools, sometimes people say, well, how do you know which one to do? And my answer to that is usually I do whichever one I move to do at the moment, which is most accessible. So if I'm driving in my car and I keep having a negative recurring thought, I might start visualizing with both hands still on the wheel, doing the EFT tapping and simply let myself have these negative thoughts and allow them to be there and move through me as I visualize as though I were tapping on the energy points. And I'll do that while I drive until I get to where I can pull over and actually do the EFT tapping or pull up the app on my phone and do a reality management worksheet. Now, one of the things that stymies a lot of people in this work is that the mind is expert at convincing us that it's right and that we are wrong. When we want to apply something like the knowledge of the mind shifter tool. Because the mind shifter tool says every time I'm in a negative emotional state, it's proof that I'm in error. And our minds are expert and have been conditioned to convince us that we're right and we know what's going on and that our perception is valid. So sometimes it's quite the challenge to get myself stop listening to the part of my mind that wants to tell me, yeah, but they really should have responded to this email. Or yeah, they never should have sent that email and said this thing. Or yeah, the weather really shouldn't be what it is right now because we have these plans for this, you know, charity to benefit needy children, and that's more important than, you know, whatever the weather's doing. So my upset, my sadness, my hurt, my confusion are, in this work we understand, they are always the clear signal that my perception is off the mark. And yet, we live in a culture that conditions us to believe that our perceptions are accurate even when we're in pain. So the big trick is, how do I train myself to understand? I've been through this dozens and dozens and dozens of times, and I've tried everything that my conscious logical mind offers up for me to do without positive long-term results. And so as it's happening again, if I listen to what my conscious logical mind is offering up, even though I'm still in pain, it's not likely to get any better. So number one bottom line rule comes to mind. I have 10 bottom line rules that I have printed up and I offer to people in a first or second session. And the first one is, if whatever I'm doing is not working, I should feel free to try something else. And if I'm in any kind of mental or emotional or psychological pain, and my conscious logical mind is telling me, this is somebody else's problem, you're right in your position here, well, that's never led to a lasting solution if I follow what my conscious logical mind is saying, and so I might want to choose again. Over and over in the Course in Miracles, it prompts us to choose again, to understand that our perception is in error if we are seeing anything less than the love of creation expressing in form, whether it's in us or someone else. And in the lesson, A New Beginning, that's one of the primary things that's mentioned over and over again. You know, choose again. It's possible to start anew in the middle of any day, in the middle of any upset. So, you know, can I convince myself, can I let myself see the truth of all of these years of trying to do the same thing over and over again and not getting the results I want? Can I program myself to be more willing to make a change? That's the first step in this work. As a matter of fact, a while back I interviewed Diedrich Wolzak on his six steps, Choose Again, Six Steps to Forgiveness. And it's not a coincidence that that is the primary first step. I need to accept that I'm upset. Right? I need to accept that I'm in conflict, and I need to be willing to push away the conditioning that wants me to minimize it and say, oh, well, you know, like the culture and the family says, oh, well, get over it, move past it, it's not that big a deal, et cetera. That's the first step in the Choose Again Forgiveness process. I acknowledge that I'm upset and in conflict. And I need to do this in order to be able to work with whatever's going on in my system. I need to remember that this situation, this conflict, this upset is there to offer me something valuable. There's a life lesson. The way Guy Finley says it is, the lessons we need to learn in life ride into our lives on the back of events we don't want. I can't go through life with, you know, nothing but sunshine and roses. When I first was working with him, Dr. Michael Rice used to quote on a regular basis one of the lines from A Course in Miracles that says, you may wonder why you need to look upon your deepest hatreds. Because a lot of people don't want to look at a negative thought. They don't want to feed it. They don't want to admit that they're stuck or they're hurting. And there's a whole school of thought that says, just do the positive mental attitude business. Just keep focusing on your true nature. Nothing else is real. And yet, my personal experience has been those people who take that approach are some of the most wounded, difficult to spend time with people I've ever encountered. Those people who want to talk rainbows and sunshine all the time, who don't want to admit their anger, their hurt, their fundamental insecurity, their sadness, they are some of the most difficult people to spend time around. And I should quickly add that just admitting that I'm a rageaholic is not a solution, because I've run into those people too, and they wear it like a badge of honor. I know I'm a rageaholic, and yet they aren't, they aren't using a 12-step process. They're not abstaining from it. Michael Rice talks about a rage, anger and rage as the most abused drug on the planet. And he says it's completely understandable why there is so much abuse, because the supplier is internal and it's free and it's socially acceptable. So it's understandable why that's the most commonly used drug in our culture, he says, on the planet. And he says, when he runs into people, just screen my comment here, but he says when he runs into people and they ask him for help in that, he says, you've got to take a 12-step approach. You've got to do abstinence first. You've got to agree to quit using your drug of choice. Just like if it was cocaine or heroin, you can't overcome an alcohol, cocaine, or heroin addiction and think I'm just going to use it on weekends. So Susan, welcome. What's on your mind today?
Hi, Dr. Tim. What a juicy talk. I'm telling you. Two things. Just a question first. Have you watched a series called Ted Lasso? On
no.
Television. On okay. My favorite character in there, and this gets me to the other question, my favorite character in there is this guy named Roy, who looks like an Iranian terrorist or something. Tall, one long eyebrow from one side of his forehead to the other, a permanent scowl, very good looking and strong, who is as foul-mouthed as anybody could possibly be, and yet underneath all that, he has a very loving nature too, but he is very free to express his disgust or disapproval or anger. I love, you're talking about people who are sunny all the time, and I know just what you mean, how exhausting that can be, and how I have to go after myself for not enjoying being with them, even though they are all sweetness and light. And I think, what's the matter with me? I don't like this. But here's this guy who's the exact opposite. And I just get such a charge out of this guy, which I think probably is suspect. It's a subpersonality I have that I would love to let out the way he does. He isn't exactly a rageaholic, but in any case, that leads me to my question. I have been working with Mira Rubin, and so has Tim Bingham. And the way she works has taken me into the darkest, most resistant parts of myself and had me facing my belief that really, basically, I can't change some things. Some things are just not going to budge. But I sit there. I dread our sessions together. I trust her. I know she's good. I don't want to look at the stuff that I'm having to look at. I think of that Fenelon who says, I find myself just in a swarm of rage and ugliness, and I realize the work has just begun, and I try to console myself with that. But this is a place where I haven't been able to use the regular tools. I'm just not using them right or something. So I sit there and I have all the demons out at once. One demon saying, you are so resistant that this poor woman is having to work terribly hard to get you through your stuff. And feel badly for her and feel sorry for her and start acting decent and don't do the work because it's just not going to be possible. All layers and layers of garbage. And I'm hanging in there and things seem to be moving in of the fact that I feel as if I'm standing nose to nose with a stone wall. Now, I don't know. I guess that isn't even a question. It's sort of like this new thing, and I don't know what to do with it. And I wondered if you had anything you could say about that.
Well, generally speaking, when somebody wants to make a change, And you clearly do, or you wouldn't spend the money on Mira Rubin and the internet show and stuff like that. So there's a part of you that wants to make a change. So you fit the first requirement.
Okay.
Generally speaking, when people want to make a change and they are resistant, one of the best things to do is explore the resistance. In whatever way you can. Give it a voice. Mm-hmm. Welcome it. Be gentle with it. I remember one time the Tuesday support group went over to somebody's house, and because he'd heard me talk so much about Krishnamurti, we put a Krishnamurti video on. And, you know, here's this. He was near the end of his life, and he's rather a frail voice, but a strong personality. And I remember, the thing I remember most from that talk was that he said, we must embrace our negative emotions the way we would a wounded child.
Whoa.
So that's the kind of thing that the best therapy models and techniques I've ever encountered have in common, which is we're not blasting through resistance. We're not going to flood the person with the experience that triggers them. We're going to help them explore what their resistance is about. We're going to assume that there's a reason some part of them is resisting doing the work that another part of them says, or the theory and the model of the therapy says, this will be better for you. And so we just want to understand. Okay. And there was one time I remember very vividly, I was in a session with a woman and we were doing a very experiential type visualization. And she said, well, I know I need to talk about something in order for this to get better. And I said, okay, well, let's not push in that direction. Let's just take a look at this little exercise. For the next minute and a half or 2 minutes, just close your eyes and visualize that when you get up tomorrow morning, this issue is completely resolved. There's no trace of it anywhere in your mind or in your interactions with family. And I started talking to her about, you know, just, you know, get comfortable, close your eyes, and just imagine you wake up tomorrow morning and everything about this situation is resolved and it's never an issue in your life again. And she had her eyes closed briefly and then her eyes popped open and she said, no, I'm not doing that. And I said, okay. And she said, what do you mean, okay? I said, that's okay. That's good. A no is just as good as a yes in this work. Now, let's take a look at why it's so important for you to refuse to do that little exercise here in my office, a little 90-second visualization exercise. You could do anything you want with it, but some part of you knows that's not okay to do. So just sit with the question for a minute. Why is it not okay to do that exercise? And she said, almost without hesitation, because if I do that exercise, my family's going to be torn apart, people will die, and people will go to prison. And I said, okay. I said, okay, then we won't do that exercise. And she said, well, so what, are you trying to trick me into doing it? I said, no. And she said, well, then I think you're lying to me. I think you're going to try and trick me. And I said, try to understand it this way. If I had migraines and they were really disruptive in my life and, you know, two or three times a week, I would lose at least a half a day, if not a whole day of functioning to these migraines. And I went to a doctor and the doctor said, no problem. We have a pill you can take. And when you take this pill, it's going to wipe out your migraines. You'll never have another migraine. You'll never lose another day. Or even a half a day to the migraine pain and not being able to function. However, in the side effects list, your family will be torn apart, people will die, and people will go to prison. I'd walk out of there and never take that pill.
Mm.
And so at some level, this woman had that kind of trade-off. Whether it was accurate or not is irrelevant. Whether it's true in the ultimate sense or not is irrelevant. But she had the same kind of decision to face that I would have if the doctor said, here, take this pill and your migraines will be gone, but your family will be torn apart, people will die, and people will go to prison. Well, that's in some part of your mind when you're saying, you know, this, I'm making this woman, Mira Rubin, work too hard, and you should. There's some part of your mind that's saying, no, this is not the time for you to move through this.
Mm.
And so anything you can do, whether it's a mind shifter, targeted journaling, or it's EFT tapping, or it's building the resources within yourself to understand and strengthen your core so that you feel the strength and competence of your ability to handle whatever arises in life. That is the work I would encourage you to do, not banging your head against the wall of resistance to doing this insight work. Because once you see what the resistance is about, it loses ability to short-circuit your efforts to heal. You'll find other ways. Once it moves into the conscious realm, you'll find other ways to cope with it or resolve the issue that will not necessitate throwing yourself into the tree chipper.
Yeah. Yeah.
Emotionally speaking.
Mm-hmm. So under all that, you basically said there is a way, and it won't be the cost for doing the work, won't be people going to prison, people dying, and the family blown apart.
Well, but it might be that I just learned to put up with the migraines.
Yeah, well, that's
right.
What
I mean, that's just if I've been living with migraines for umpteen years, you know, that might be the coping mechanism that is the best I've got based on my resources, my family situation, you know, my place in the world, et cetera.
Mm.
So what I'm trying to do is wait a minute. I'm trying to help you short circuit the path you were on, which is I'm going to find a way to get this done. And I'm asking you to inhabit the position that says, let me understand the part of me that doesn't want to do this and why.
Okay.
And then once I fully understand that, then I can start to explore, okay, maybe I look at this thing that I've called a symptom or a problem, and maybe I redefine it as the best, most adaptive coping mechanism I have access to. I remember one time I was working with somebody and they had come in and they were just desperate because they were in med school, and all of a sudden they had developed this inability to study and remember things. And we started doing some of this deeper experiential work and what would happen if the symptom were removed, et cetera, et cetera. And what they uncovered was that they did not want to be in med school. What they wanted to do was an entirely different career, but they had these overbearing parents. And what they uncovered was an absolute belief that if they went through with med school and finished, they would never break out of it. They would die of a broken heart and depression, et cetera. Right? They would, they would become suicidal. And so once they met that head on, now the options open up to them. The first thing that happens is if they find out that, hey, I'm smart enough to know there's all kinds of things I can do with this medical degree, and some of them might be in line with what I would really like to do with my career, but I wasn't able to see that when I had this other part of me shutting me down.
Yeah.
The other option is, and then maybe the inability to study just falls away because I see it for what it is. The other option is I see it and I'm really in touch with the part of me that says, yes, this is crushing my spirit and I don't want to live if I'm living my life for my parents. I only want to live if I'm living to my truth. Then all of a sudden, the inability to study gets redefined, not as a problem, but as the saving grace that's going to keep this person from marching towards suicidal depression.
Right.
So we don't get rid of the inability to study. The inability to study is now seen as the precious gift that's saving them from suicidal depression.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to help you pull back from the idea that, oh, good, Dr. Chim just gave me a way to try to overcome my resistance. And this is not about overcoming your resistance to doing the Mira Rubin work or the worksheets. This is about understanding the need for the resistance. And then once you understand it, you might see that, oh, this resistance is there to serve a function, and I have more adult, mature coping mechanisms that I can use to achieve that same function. But you might also see, oh, there's a hidden dynamic here I was completely unaware of, and this resistance is necessary, and it really is a high-level coping mechanism, and I don't want to get rid of it. And then I redirect from my conscious goals. And so that's why I pulled you up short there. I just want you to watch the trick of your mind that wants to keep ramming your head into that brick wall, even if you're trying to make it look like you're not ramming your head into the brick wall.
Right. That's really helpful, Dr. Tim. I want to ask you for a mind shifter, but I know it's kind of early. I mean, how would you know?
But hold on a minute, and let me just say this story from Guy Finley that just popped into my head. But the umpteenth time I said the brick wall, has a story about a reporter that heard about this town where people were just at wit's end. They were just, there was a malady that was spreading through the town, and no one could find a cure for it, and people were basically just becoming lethargic and you know, redefining couch potato, and nothing was getting done. So he went on this journey as one of these world reporters. He goes around to find it, and as he's driving, he sees a road that's not appearing on any map or GPS, and he gets curious, and so he takes the road. And a few miles down the road, it seems to be going off into nowhere, he sees what appears to be a town in the distance, and that town isn't on the map. So as he's driving, the next thing he notices is off in a field to his left, there's a person standing right up against a brick wall. But the brick wall is only like 5 feet tall and 5 feet wide. And instead of walking around it, the person is banging their head against the brick wall. And he drives on a little bit more, and he starts seeing these brick walls with these people stuck behind them or pounding on them with their fists or hitting them with their heads or just sitting with their back against the brick wall and crying, sobbing into their knees. And finally, as he's driving, there's one that's fairly close to his car. So he stops his car, and the thing that made him stop is there's this quite elderly person who's walking, and all of a sudden the reporter sees this brick wall materialize out of nowhere. And so he stops his car because he thinks that old man isn't going to survive, you know, pounding his head against that wall. So he gets out of his car and heads over toward the old man, and a brick wall pops up in front of the reporter. And he goes, well, this is silly. And he goes to climb over the brick wall. And as he grabs the top of it, it starts to grow. And it's grown, and it's 10 feet, 15, 20 feet. It gets about 20 feet high, and he lets go and drops to the ground. He says, well, this is nuts. And he goes to walk around it to the left, and the wall moves to the left. He goes to walk around it to the right, wall moves to the right. Obviously, there's no way around this. But this is a spiritual person. This is a reporter who's been around the globe. He knows it's not going to be beneficial to pound his head against it because he's seen already people knock themselves out, et cetera. So he sits down and just does this little meditation lotus pose looking at the wall. And when he opens his eyes, the wall is gone. And so he gets up and he decides to start heading to the old man to try and, quote, rescue the old man. And the wall pops up again. So then he peeks around the wall and he sees the old man say something to the wall and then walk right through the wall like it's not there. Like either the wall became ghost-like or the man became ghost-like, and then the wall disappeared and the man kept walking. And the reporter just starts yelling at him, wait a minute, stop, hold it. And finally the old man turns around and walks back to the reporter who's still stuck behind the wall, and he says, I just saw a miracle. I can't believe what happened. What did you do? Are you a magician? How did you have – are you a ghost? And the old man says, oh, no, nothing like that. And finally the old man gives up the secret. He says these 11 words, who I have been is powerless to take me any further. Maybe it's 12 words. Who I have been is powerless to take me any further. 11 words. So when you're stuck like this and you've got this fabulous person, Ruben, Mira Ruben, and you've got this technique and you've got all the great tools from Dr. Michael Rice, and there's a part of you saying, no, I won't let myself go there. Let's help you find a way to just accept and explore who you are and what the resistance is all about, what you're afraid is going to happen if you give yourself over to this process with Mira Ruben or these techniques, and not have any other intention than just understanding the resistance at deeper and deeper levels, and then see where that takes you. And the mind shifter at this point that I would give you is simply, it's safe and healing for me to understand the depth and breadth of my resistance to my work with Mira Rubin.
Depth and breadth of my resistance in my work with Mira Rubin. What was the last part you said?
That it's safe for me to understand both the depth and the breadth of my resistance to the work with Mira Rubin.
Okay. All right.
And we're just focused on understanding it. We're not focused on, you know, the mind shifter isn't, it's safe and healing for me to do the work with Mira Rubin. That's not it. Because your mind is going to keep your head pounding on the wall. We want to back you up a couple perspectives from that and have you explore with this childlike curiosity. Gee, I wonder why I'm so resistant. I really want to know. Not how can I get around the resistance, how can I do the work, how can I make a change, but what is the part of me that is so committed to staying right where it is?
Mm-hmm.
That's the invitation.
You know, what comes to my mind is just silly, but if you interviewed her on Zoom, then you saw her, right? Or did you just do it as a podcast?
Yeah, I saw her and Maggie.
Maggie the bird. I love that bird. She has this brick wall behind her.
Yes.
Do you remember it?
Oh, yes.
Do you know what?
It's not real,
do you
but
know
it's...
What it's... Yeah, okay, so you know that. One day, something touched it, and it wiggled, and I thought, God, is that a symbol for my, oh, my God, that it's not a brick wall. It's not a brick wall. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's
right,
not about the wall. It's not about the wall. It's about who you are.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Guy Finley story. Who I have been is powerless to take me any further. This wall isn't blocking me from going further. Who I am blocks me. And that's why it's so relevant to this idea of you resisting the work, either Michael's work or Guy Finley's work or Mira Rubin's work. So thank you for letting us assist you in the last half of the show. I will look forward to hearing comments and reports as you see fit. I'll mute you so you can listen to the second hour. Blessings. And I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. What was that Guy Finley quote, who I have been is?
Powerless to take me any further.
Okay. I like that. All right, got it.
All right.
Thank
have
you.
A wonderful show.
Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Wednesday, October the 27th, 2021. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. Welcome, everybody. Honored that you're here with us and we get to move into this conversation once again about understanding the process of forgiveness. I've asked everyone to hold the space. I have a friend, and she's a Unity minister. He first actually touched his work back in 80s. Down in Palm Beach, Florida. He was an attorney there, and as a result of coming to a series of workshops I did at Unity of Palm Beaches, he became a Unity minister. And I just got a note from him this morning and spent an hour on the phone with him after hearing from him. He's on his way to see his physician and was dropping me a note to say goodbye, that he was probably leaving his body today. And so we had a good conversation. They actually had ears that were much bigger to hear this work than he has in, 40 or so years that he's been involved in it, or at least has touched in around the edges of it. But if you would, I'd just ask you to hold a space of love and healing being the healing of his into being, whether his body heals or not, which he may still do. He heard on a whole other level the possibilities. So, John, we hold a space for you and just ask everybody that's listening to just send love in the direction. Just tap in through his vibrations, the vibration of his name, John Considine. The universe knows how to get the energy to him. We hold you in our hearts, John, and send you our deepest blessings and love. So I invite you to breathe with me and breathe with John. It's interesting to talk to someone who's on in that stage on their journey, and certainly an honor to be one of the people that he contacted to have a conversation with, should he choose to drop his body, and should he choose to do his next piece of work. All of the space that he moves into deeper contact with the truth of who he is as he leaves his body behind, if that's what he does. Breathing with you, my friend. And we invite you into this conversation to have big ears. Ready and willing to hear and apply everything that's possible to apply from the first century Aramaic teaching to this man, Yeshua. Everything we're doing has been decoded from his work. If you think, and I've had several people say, Michael, what a genius piece of work you've done to put that together. It's like, no, it's not a reflection of my genius. I put it together, but I am not the one who came to the point of understanding and the how to use the direct use of the tools. So all of the honor and thanks for that goes to the man Yeshua. The brilliance of this physicist, this physiologist, this geneticist, this psychologist is absolutely astounding. When you meet him in his native Aramaic language, now you meet him through the Greeks and, he sounds like a Greek. In fact, if he sat in most so-called churches today, he'd say that's all Greek to me, because that's what most of so-called Christianity is teaching in the name of this man, Yeshua, teaching Greek philosophy. Gods that murder their own children, oh yes, create horrible places for people to go. If you haven't met the Creator yet, meet him. Choose to meet him through Yeshua. You'll notice that he calls the Creator our Father, not his Father, our Father. And he gives us the attributes of the Creator. Love, period. Someone whose good pleasure it is to take us into, the Greeks translated as the kingdom, but actually in Aramaic, those words that have been translated as the kingdom of God actually translate to community of love. Good pleasure to give it to us. And it's been given to us from minute one. One of the things that I took John through, he has a very dear daughter who's, Jeannie, we're out in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, speaking at Unity there just shortly after his daughter was born. And I think she's now 16, maybe 15. So that's how long it's been since we've been in Coeur d'Alene. But he was able to very deeply, when he asked me, he put forward the question, well, what is God anyway? He says, that's something I've worked on all my life. Well, I can't give you an answer to that. You could pile all the words in the English language, the Spanish, the German, the Russian, Yiddish. You could put them all together and you won't find the definition. But hold a newborn child, tap into the essence of that newborn, and he has a daughter that he cherishes very deeply. And was very quickly able to go back to the moment where he first held her. And such a clear response was that her essence was love. And then when I asked the question, so John, when you tap into her essence, is she loving you or is she love? And it's just so clear, she is love. So there's God. There, you got a definition now. If you want to know what the Creator is, hold a newborn. Tap into the essence of the newborn. And recognize that our essence is the same, and that we live in a culture that has become masterful. The most cherishing, so-called loving parents are masters at ripping the child out of the experience of themselves as love. They're driving them deeply into insecurity, self-loathing, rage, and fear. And the return to the truth of who we are means that we need to face those moments. And most everyone, when they get down to the brass tacks of it, go back to the most deeply painful moments, and there you find, right there with them, a parent who is not able to function as love themselves. And there's where the offense begins. They talk about you've done something to offend God. God has never been offended. That's just silliness. Love could not be offended. But can we engage in an energy that's other than love and lose our connection to love, break our connection to love? Yeah, we've all done it. And we do that by engaging in energetic patterns that never belonged within us. Those energetic patterns in Aramaic were called sin. Sin, an archery term in Aramaic that simply means off the mark. When you were on the archery range and fired the bullseye and you missed the bullseye, the scorekeeper yelled, "Sin, you're off the mark." How do we find ourselves in hell? We find ourselves in hell by forgetting who we are. By buying into sadness and rage and fear and guilt and pain and drama and trauma. And those energetic patterns are stored right there in our physiology, and our physiology becomes hell. So if you want to get out of hell, we recently on the show, I guess a couple of weeks ago, we talked about the film Gandhi. So we went out and pulled the movie out and watched it. And there's a particularly powerful scene. Gandhi, he's sworn to fast to death if he has to stop the violence that he's become a part of by working to rid the India of the British Empire. And there's conflict between the Muslims and the Hindus. And he's laying on his deathbed. He's laying, you know, he can just breathe. He's on his way out. And this wild-eyed Hindu man comes up to the room where he is, and he's got a piece of bread, and he throws it at Gandhi. He says, "Here, eat. I don't want your death on my conscience." Gandhi looks at him like, "Well, what's going on with you, bud?" He said, "I'm going to go to hell." And Gandhi says, "Why? Why do you believe that?" He said, "Today I killed a child. I picked a child up and I smashed its head against a wall and I killed him." "Why would you do such a thing?" "Because they killed my son." And Gandhi looks at him, and Gandhi can hardly speak at this point. And the actor that plays Gandhi in that film is so powerfully amazing in it. And Gandhi says, "I know a way out of hell." The man looks at him, and he's like, I mean, he's just wild-eyed, crazy-looking. He says, "I know a way out of hell." And he raises his hand up, and when the man told him he killed a child, he showed him how tall his son was. He said, "They killed my son." And Gandhi raises his hand to that lover. He says, "Go and find a Muslim boy, about this tall, and raise him in love, but raise him as a Muslim. So he's talking to a Hindu man. And there's this hate between the Hindus and the Muslim at that stage. Just raise him as a Muslim, and you'll find your way out of hell. What does one have to do to find their way out of hell? And your hell might be the person next door, or the government, or your spouse, or your child, or your parent, or the guy down the way, whatever it is. There's a way out. And the way out is to raise yourself as a human being, to choose to function as you were designed to function, as conscious, active, present love, which means that you're going to have to face everything in you that's unlike that. Everything has been born and bred in you through the generations, everything based in hostility or fear, everything that could possibly take you out of the truth about you as love. It's going to surface in you. It's going to be seen. It's going to be felt. It's going to have to be dealt with. It's not Dr. Feelgood. It's not easy. And so our reading comes from chapter 24 in Why Is This Happening to Me Again on healing crisis. And we're looking at what the healing process looks like. So I've just told Richard that if you're going to go into release mode, as he's done, you know, we're getting close to the end of our conversation. We've been having this conversation now with Richard for almost a year. We've got, this is the 1st of November pretty much, so we've got 2 more months of conversation out of 12. And we've gone through many healing crises with Richard. He's looked at many different levels of rage and hatred and really stepped into some deep process work. And so I move forward to explain what that means. Healing crises are usually, we're on page 135 if you're following us in the book. Healing crises are usually experienced on 3 levels. When an energy goes into the human system, it creates symptoms. When these symptoms of a degenerative energy are suppressed, as with the use of drugs, they do not leave the system, but are driven deep down into tissue. This happens whether the suppressed energy is physical, mental, or emotional. Symptomatically, each release of old disease energies is experienced and felt in the same way, with the same intensity as when they entered the system as disease. Willingness is the cosmic grease that accelerates and eases the process of release. On a physical level, as the energy releases, it looks like old physical symptoms and low energy. On the mental level, release looks like any kind of negative thought. And on the emotional level, it feels like any old feeling that has ever been suppressed. Release can also put in its appearance as depression. These are all desirable states, Richard. Right, Michael. Richard rolls his eyes. In the past, I would have accused you of being crazy, but I'm really starting to hear you with different ears. It's a strange sensation finding myself saying, I'm willing to purposely experience pain. I have one problem, though. If I'm going to experience all these symptoms, how will I know if I'm in one of those healing crises or if I'm sick? Ultimately, you must be in touch with what is going on in your system and make the determination for yourself as to the nature of your symptoms. There are 3 signals. And actually, there's a 4th one that I've learned of since I wrote the books that I've come to understand on a new level. So there's 3 signals that can assist you in determining whether or not your symptoms are healing in process. Number 1, first, you've reached a new level of vitality. Number two, second, you're doing your inner work and more of the right things. Third, there's an increase in elimination. Any or all of the illuminative channels, the skin, the lungs, the bowel, the bladder, mucous membranes, all increase their output. So in a healing process, there will be the expression symptomatically of the energy that's been locked down and shoved out of sight coming back into view and expressing through our physiology. So again, on a physical level, it's any kind of physical symptom you've ever had, anywhere in the body, wherever there's been a hurt or a pain, a trauma, an accident, being struck, whatever it is. As you go into the healing process, you're going to go back through and process that level of energy. On a mental level, it's any kind of negative thought and actually confusion. So if you find yourself confused, confusion is a very high state compared to thinking you know when you don't have a clue. So when you undo conflicting energetic patterns, you know, thoughts are frequencies much like light energy is. So, you know, I'll use an example. Let's imagine I've got a whiteboard in front of me and I shine a red light, a blue light, and a green light on the whiteboard. Each of the three in a different place on the board, and I have clarity. I see clearly the color red. I see clearly the color blue. I see clearly the color white or green. Not going to see white on a whiteboard. But I see each of the... Now, we understand scientifically there's no such thing as red, blue, or green. Scientifically, each is a frequency the brain interprets red as red, blue as blue, green as green, except in people who are colorblind who don't interpret those frequencies the same way. We say, oh, that person actually doesn't see green. Their brain doesn't interpret that frequency as green. That's the person's colorblind. They have to be very careful and watch the lights because and realize the green one's at the top. The red one's at the bottom. Or green one's at the bottom, red one's at the top, wherever you are in the world. So frequencies, now let's imagine that I took the red light, the blue light, and the green light, and I shone them all in the same spot on the whiteboard. Will I have clarity on either red, blue, or green? No. Those energetic patterns of light are additive and subtractive with each other. They mix with each other, and so I get some kind of a combination of red, blue, and green. Thoughts work the same way. If I have an old rage thought that I'm convinced is absolutely true about somebody else other than myself, and you bring to me a true thought based in love, when those two energies mix in the mind, they become confused with each other. They become interlacing with each other, just like the red, the blue, and the green. Frequencies, literally the energetic patterns of those frequencies become interactive with each other and mix. And that's called confusion. Confusion is a necessary state in the healing process. And as you undo every frequency within you from every generation, and you keep bringing truth in as you allow those conflicting thoughts to come forward, confusion is going to be a part of the process. And again, on an emotional level, any kind of negative feeling you've ever had in depression, that's what healing looks like. And the idea is when you recognize you're there, instead of getting lost in the old thought patterns again, you stay connected to the higher energy. There was a psychologist that wrote a poem about that. It went like this: as you travel through life, no matter what your goal, keep your eye upon the donut and not upon the hole. If you keep focused on the negative thought, then you'll keep reinforcing the negative thought. If you bring in a higher, more connected, more loving thought, the lower, disconnected thought in hostility or fear is going to start to move. If you lose your awareness in that negative thought, then you'll tend to go back and do the same thing again. So you need to be aware and stay connected to the higher. You'll notice that you know, many times when we're processing with someone, we might go round and round and round the same issue and sort out thought disorder after thought disorder after thought disorder. And as you stay connected to the higher, we spoke yesterday, and if you weren't on the show, make a note, take the time to get on Netflix and watch the movie Self-Made. A very powerful picture of a young African-American woman back in the 1800s who became the world's first or the country's first self-made female African-American millionaire back in the 1800s into the early 1900s. True story, and it's a beautiful portrayal of someone committed to a higher thought and having to work through everything less than that. In her personal life, in her financial life, in her business life, every aspect. It's a very powerful portrayal of someone committed to working through everything and putting one foot in front of the other and moving forward. Very inspirational, very powerful when you understand what you're looking at. All you watch this woman do is clean up thought disorder after thought disorder after thought disorder. And it's our thought disorders, I offer literally, that kill us. Because when you put in a thought based in hostility or fear, you're putting in an actual energy to your structure, to your cells. The cell biologists are now showing us in the laboratory that when you think a thought, that thought produces an actual molecule in your body. And that molecule, called a neuropeptide, circulates around in your structure until it finds a cell with a receptor site that matches. It lands on the receptor site, and it inserts itself in the cell, literally the neuropeptide, the vibratory pattern of the neuropeptide inserts itself into the cell. And if you were inside the cell watching as that neuropeptide was inserted, you would say, oh, look at this chemistry coming into the cell. Look at the chemistry of the cell changing. And if the chemistry is of a disintegrative nature, that cell is now in a diseased condition. Healing crisis means I'm going to pull that chemistry back out, decode the thought behind it, and literally expose it to love and dissolve it. That's healing crisis. That's the healing process. And then the fourth thing that will tell you when you're in a healing process and you know that your symptoms are healing and it's not time to run out and get yourself a drug. Fourth thing is that you will crave. In the healing process, you will crave the drugs you used to shut down and suppress your pain back in the original events where the disease process occurred. Best example I've got of that, and some of you, many of you were probably on the show back, and this probably goes back, Jeannie, I'm not sure, was it maybe 5 years ago? There was a young woman who was a natural practitioner. She actually wrote a couple of books that we carry on our tape table on naturopathy. And she had started doing this work way back, you know, 30 some years ago and gotten away from it and came back to it several years ago. And she was on the radio show a lot back then. I mean, almost every day. She actually did the food for us in one of our intensives. Called me one day, and she was someone who's very naturally oriented and doing something, eating something like sugar and dairy were just not part of her routine. She was very naturally oriented, fresh and raw food. You know, that was her thing. And she called me one day and she said, Michael, I don't know what's going on. I just can't help myself. I'm eating ice cream like I'm just eating. And, you know, in a naturopathic world, molecules of a fluid from the body of a cow that are designed to cause the body of a calf to grow from 60 or 80 pounds to 1,000 pounds within a year don't belong within the human system. So it's not something she would even think about doing, but all of a sudden she found herself doing that. She's like, Michael, I'm confused. I don't get it. I don't know what's going on. And so I started asking, well, what are you working on? What are your worksheets about? She said, well, I'm working on some old stuff with my dad. You know, her dad was Middle Eastern and treated her like a lot of Middle Eastern men treat women, very degrading. I said, well, what did your dad used to do? You know, I know you've also shared with me the way your father cherished you. What would happen when there was a big conflict and he'd been abusive with you? Bingo. I mean, the lights just went off. Oh, I got it. He would take me out for ice cream. So here she is working around those issues with her dad. And literally, when we use an anesthetic, something like sugar and the congestive, you know, all that cow's products can do in the body is create congestion. They are not molecules that are designed for the human body. I mean, great for a cow's body. They're not designed for the human body. And so when you use something that congests the system or anesthetizes the system the way sugar does, and you start to reopen that part of the energy system that contains those old energetic dynamics, there are actual energy signatures, if not molecules, still in the structure that represent the old drug that was used. Her drug was ice cream. She was finished with ice cream at that. I mean, it was only an instant. It was like, oh, God, I got it. And her craving for ice cream was gone. If you use alcohol, you know, we've all heard about the person who was a drunk at one time in their life. They got on the wagon, they quit drinking, they've been sober for 30 years, and all of a sudden we hear that one day, you know, 30 years later, they fall off the wagon. What happened? Yeah, they just got their 30-year chip yesterday. Why did they fall off the wagon? Well, celebration time. All these people giving them accolades, praising them, new level of vitality, friends, upliftment. And what happens in an uplifted state? That which I could not process yesterday because I didn't have the vitality to, I can now process and work through. And I start to move that energy out of my system. Healing crisis, healing process. So the fourth thing you can put on your list is a craving for the drug you used. If you use some sort of drug, and that could be food or caffeine or nicotine, could be anything. I mean, in this work, we define a drug as drugging oneself. Compulsive use of any person, place, circumstance, substance, or activity to keep from feeling and dealing with what's going on in you or to keep from hearing and following your highest guidance. That's addiction. And so as you process through what you need to process through, anything you've ever used addictively will tend to be right there in your face. And if you're aware of it, you can go, oh, I'm in a healing crisis, rather than let it grab you by the face and lead you back into and have you falling off the wagon. So that's the process of healing. So my offering to Richard in this case is, if your answer to all three of these signals is yes, are you at a new level of vitality? Have you been doing more and more of the right things? Is there an increase in elimination? What's happening with your eliminative channels? Are they letting loose of more and more waste? And are you craving old drugs? If they're yes, when you're symptomatic, you're likely in a healing crisis and it's time to use the tools. Rest and remember the cosmic grease. Be willing. The key thought that closes out this chapter, it was just a short chapter. When in pain, you have two choices. One is healing. Any other choice, no matter what it is, leaves you in your pain. So you have the opportunity when you're in a symptomatic state as a result of doing the right things, experiencing what's moving in your structure, as you step into that next higher state, you get to move through what never belonged in your structure, and you're in a healing process, or what in naturopathic medicine is called a healing crisis. So I hope it helps to be able to understand that, and tomorrow we'll step into waking from the has-been, recognizing that, you know, everything that the mind constructs via perception, it constructs out of the past. And if it's from the past, it's dead. If you live in it, you're dead. You remember Yeshua said, let the dead bury the dead. Let the blind lead the blind. We're here to step into a different state. And that is to really, truly experience life through the truth of who we are as active present love. So honored and delighted that you're here to be part of the conversation. Miss Jeannie, do we have anything happening in the chat room or anybody in the on the switchboard with a hand up with thought force?
No, it is all quiet. We have several people out there, but nobody has a hand up. So if someone presses one, you're first in line. We have 26 minutes.
You know, if you're out there and you've been through a healing crisis and recognized it, if you're up to it, you know, up for it, it can be very powerful to offer support. And so if you're out there with a story about it or a question about it, put a hand up. Push one. Jeannie?
We got a hand up.
Oh,
area
cool.
Area code 484. You're on the air. Is this Ellen?
Yes, it is. Hi, Jeannie. Hi, Michael.
Welcome, young lady. Good to hear your voice.
Thank you. I'm calling because I feel like I know I'm in the middle of a great healing opportunity. I've been going through a lot the last month, and it relates to having one of my cats disappear.
Ouch.
And so it's like there's a what I've been really struggling with is, I have already gained so much insight through, through this whole process and seen all these parallels between things in the past and what's going on now and, finding the thoughts that I really need to let go of. And I'm still like, every time I think, okay, I start feeling better, and then it's like I just don't seem to be able to let go of this cat and the thought that, he might need me. And that if I, something in me is telling me you just need to let him go. And then there's another part of me that says, and I know it's because I was in this position as a child. What if he needs help? And I just stop even looking for him.
Well, here would be my offering, Ellen. And that is, are you in your highest intuitive, healing, capable self when you're in some form of hostility or fear or degraded energy, or when you are totally connected to love and being? Which state would you call your highest?
Oh, obviously when I'm connected to love.
If your cat needs support and therefore needs your intuition to tap into where he is, what's going on with him, how you can support him, perhaps in mind only, or perhaps actually show up in his physical presence, which state would you have the highest guidance to be able to get that together and offer that support?
Yeah, I obviously in my that love state, and this is what's been going on with me. I get myself there, and I'm always, because I have his flyers that I put up, I have some in my house, and so I see his picture all the time, and I'm always just affirming how much I love him, sending him my love, picturing him being well, and trying to connect with him, and I can get myself in a really good space with it and really trust that he's exactly where he's supposed to be right now, and that everything is going to work out just perfectly, even though I have no idea, what that looks like, but just trust that And I'll be okay for like, you know, maybe 2 or 3 days. And then,
yep.
then I get a message from someone, because of course I posted him on all the social media as,
right.
as missing. I'll get a message, oh, I saw your cat today, you know, and then I go into this process of getting my hopes up, and then, you know, nothing comes of it, and feeling,
right.
you know, I just keep crashing.
Yep.
And then I have to work my way back up into that good place. And then
right.
It's
I hear you.
This, yeah. It's been really
powerful.
Yeah.
So when I listen to what you've shared with us so far, here's my input. Here's what I hear. I hear that you cherish this animal. And when you get into a really connected space, you're there, you can hold that space. But it brings you to a thought disorder you learned at a time when you needed help and somebody wasn't there for you.
Exactly.
And your healing crisis looks like you working through the thought disorders you learned. I don't know what age you were when that event happened. You might have been 2 or 4 or 10. I don't know. But you took on thought disorders, and they keep dragging you back into the pit.
Yes.
So what's the thought?
There's actually two. One is from when I was a child, and I was in a position where I needed help and wasn't getting
right.
it. And then mm-hmm. the other is actually kind of almost on the other side of that, where I do feel like if I give up on him, like I'm abandoning him. And I,
right.
so the other side of it is that, because I know obviously I didn't abandon this animal, he just disappeared, right? But
right.
I was shown a past life experience in a couple years ago in which I abandoned my baby. And I was realizing yesterday that the thoughts I'm having about him now, like, where is he? How is he? Like, these are the things that I feel like so much desperation around, that I must have been having those same exact feelings back in that lifetime about my baby that
right.
I abandoned.
Right.
So I see two different real opportunities for me in this for that needs
powerful.
Healing. Yes.
Yeah. Nice work being able to be conscious of that. So then what forgiveness looks like, let's take the context of the early childhood experience where you needed help and there was nobody there for you. And remembering that the forgiveness process looks like when I have a construct in my mind, perceptual construct that's based in some form of thought disorder, some form of hostility or fear, the thing that activates that is a goal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There's a powerful line in the Course in Miracles that says, perception is a skill made up by us to take the place of what the Creator gave us in creation. So the Creator gave us a life and an experience, and we made up perception. We made up these constructs based in thought disorders. These constructs are reflections of thought disorders. So mm-hmm. the thought disorder that you took on, my offering, what I hear, the closest I hear it in that early childhood experience is that nobody's there for me.
Yep.
Or, and there may be several variations on the theme, I need help
yes.
and there's no help.
Yes.
So
I
what
can't
forgiveness would...
I'm helpless.
Right.
No one, you know, is there to help me. Yeah, all of
hopeless.
Those.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you might have several worksheets to do around that. So I'd mm-hmm. start looking at, seeing as how that's what's coming up in this situation, you go back and you start looking at, so my first worksheet would be, I'd really like somebody to just be there for me. And maybe there's a lot of, and with the animal missing, very likely there's grief. And the grief would be a reflection of the energy taken on in that early childhood experience where I just wanted somebody to be there for me and there wasn't anybody. And the grief and the loss
exactly.
and the you know, perhaps self-deprecation would be what you'd need to process through. So let's cancel the goal. How about, you know, I cancel the goal and think of yourself in that situation as a child. I cancel the goal to have somebody be there for me.
Mm-hmm.
How about just going ahead and doing that?
Yeah, well, what comes up is that I can't do it on my own.
Yeah, okay. So then the next step, and this would be, you know, when they said to Yeshua, how many darn worksheets do we have to do? Is 7 enough? In Aramaic, he said, no, 77 times 70. So there might be several. So that would be the first, and I'd sit down. This sounds like it's really core stuff and important enough mm-hmm. to sit down and do each of these worksheets in writing. So the first mm-hmm. one would be the need, the desire for someone to be there for me. And then what's my next worksheet? Oh, well, surfaced as you canceled that goal is the thought disorder, I can't do it on my own. So what would the goal be there? The goal would be to be able to do this, whatever the situation was, to be able to handle it.
Very big, because I started having all these issues with my hands. And when I really cued in on it, what came to me are these two phrases. The one was, I can't handle it, and the other one, I forget what the other one was right now, but it was like, yeah but I say that to myself like a lot, and so I catch myself now every time I, you know, that thought starts coming in, and I say, I can handle it, I can.
But you see, when I try to kid myself, when I try mm-hmm. to be in what I call, it's called a disorder that I, or at least a disease that I call premature positive thinking. I can't. But if I'm trying to plaster over a thought disorder that says I can't, then I'm trying to cover the pit that I need to clean out with a positive thought that isn't true at this moment.
It may
actually be true. Gee, here I am. It's now 30 years later. I can do it. But if I still plaster over the thought disorder that I can't, then that thought disorder is like an infection that's going to fester and impact. Did I hear you say you're having trouble with your hands?
Yes. They,
what's happening?
It's like the circulation. Well, when I go to sleep at night, and this has been going on for years, when I go to sleep at night, they totally fall asleep. It's like I lose all circulation. And I have trouble like trying to put them in position. You know, I'm always constantly changing the, you know, waking up because they've fallen asleep and trying to move them into position where they wake up again. And then.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So then the next worksheet would look like, I cancel my need to be able to handle this. I cancel my need to have the skills. Or it might be I don't have the knowledge, or maybe I'm not smart enough, or I'm not capable, whatever. Ferret out and look for exactly what the goal is in that situation that, you know, in the essence of it at this point would be, I need to be able to handle this. So I cancel my need to be able to handle this. And what happens, remember, when you cancel a goal, let's go back again to that thought from the course. Perception is a skill made up by us to take the place of what the Creator gave us in creation. So the Creator gave you full power. But if I buy a thought disorder that says, I can't handle this, then with that thought disorder, I shut down, through my own beliefs, that part of my power. It's there. I just lock it away from myself. I put it away in a drawer, and I dissociate from it, so it's no longer mine.
Right.
The way I open that up again is to cancel the need. It seems backward, but by canceling the need, what happens is that perceptual construct that's coming from some deep unconscious place in my tissue structure, in this case, literally, physiologically, your hands, that's the part of your mind, this thought disorder stored in, you're noticing. When mm-hmm. I cancel my need to handle it, that perceptual construct and all the pain that it holds collapses in on itself. And when it collapses in on itself, I can now literally capture the neuropeptides out of the tissue, pull them out of the tissue, decode them. Oh, maybe when I cancel the need to be able to handle this, I'm going to come to awareness that, well, if I don't handle this, I'm going to die.
Well, that's how I felt.
Or I'm going to be, okay, so that would be the next thought disorder. So now what's the goal when that comes? Say again?
I was going to say, in fact, I mean, I think it was like, I don't know, something in me finally like made the decision that I must find a way to stop feeling these feelings that I can't handle, or else I'm going to be in a mental institution and locked away and maybe lobotomized. Or I was just terrified that if I didn't find a way to handle this, that something really bad, like I may not survive. So somehow a part of me shut down my whole thing.
So we want to open that back up again. You're not going to find any happy stuff in there probably. This is not going to be a Dr. Feelgood process as we're talking about. The healing crisis isn't going to be fun. But if you cancel your goal, literally in this case, I cancel my need to survive in this situation, that's when the perception based on the thought disorder of I'm not going to survive this collapses in on itself. Now I can take the death thought. I can allow the death thought that's in my unconscious, stored literally in my hands, to open, breathe in the presence of it, expose it to love, and dissolve it. Not have to carry that around in my tissue structure any longer.
Something else just popped in. I was also shown last summer, taken my own life, and the way that I had done it was literally, I took my life, you know, it was at my own hand, and I saw myself with the gun. This is mainly in my right hand. I get a little bit in my left hand, but in my right hand, I held the gun to my temple and I pulled the trigger. And so now seeing that connection, because I kind of suspect that the life that I abandoned my baby was the same life that I committed suicide, because I couldn't handle it. I couldn't handle the guilt of the abandoning, and then I couldn't handle the not knowing of what had happened to the baby, you know, like all this stuff I'm going through right now. So like right now is my opportunity to heal all this stuff that I was able to.
Who'd have thunk that a cat disappearing could possibly bring someone as enlightened as you are into this level of healing?
I know, he's my angel. I was like, wow, I saw how I was his angel, because he was starving when I took him in. I mean, and he was still a kitten, and I brought him back to life. And it was like, I'm like, is it a coincidence that once I got him to the point where, I mean, this cat was ravenous. And after about, you know, a year of being with me, he was perfectly healthy, had grown into an adult, and actually got to the point of being the pickiest eater of all my cats. And I was having trouble feeding him because he was turning his nose up at everything. And then that's when he disappears. And I was like, wow, maybe I was just an angel that he needed at that point in time to food, to survive. Now I completed my service with him and he is gone. And then I saw that, wow, he's really my angel too, because his disappearance is bringing up all this stuff that I knew that.
Powerful. And if you think back to that memory of abandoning your child, was there any kind of incarceration or being put into an institution or anything that happened? Are you aware of any of that?
I was not. It was very bizarre the way this particular experience was shown to me, and all I was given was that I left a baby at the curb. That's all I know.
Well, just listening to your language somewhere, and I wonder if there's something genetically, is there anyone in your family's history that you know of that's been put into a mental institution and or was the result of abandoning that child where you went crazy and maybe ended up in that institution? Just hearing the language that goes around it, our speech is part of the healing process and will touch into speech patterns oftentimes in doing the worksheet process that reflect experiences, events, sometimes genetic memories that need to be cleaned out.
Well, there's the only thing that pops into my mind is that there is a history, because it happened with myself and it happened with my father's sister, of there being no bond ever forming between the mother and the daughter, and
right.
there being this huge gulf that never got resolved. Like in the case of my aunt, who I never met, because she left as soon as she was able to leave the house at the age of 18, she moved across the country, and she never for the remainder of her mother's life or my, you know, her brother, my father's life, ever contacted again. And it's just like this huge rift. And I found out that what caused the rift between my mother and myself was exactly the same as what caused the rift between her and her mother, which was the father's insistence that the mother not hold or tend to the baby.
Yeah, that was a very common thing back then.
Yeah.
So notice what all you're processing at this point. That's huge stuff. And it sounds like perhaps that's some of the energy that is also being cleaned up in this forgiveness work that you need to do between you and your mom. And who knows what kind of results cleaning that up will bring in your world.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that forgiveness is kind of complete as far as between my mother and myself. I mean, I really saw how all of the things that happened there were actually for my benefit, because I came in with such a for codependency, and she pretty much didn't allow that to even be a possibility with her. And it really pushed me to self-reliance. I mean, there, you know, everyone in the family, because there was no one to rely on. So it was pretty much forcing me into a place I needed to go in life.
So my offering is the antidote to codependence is not independence. The answer to codependence is interdependence, where we can be there for each other, but not out of compulsive, pained states, but rather intertwining our lives with others in the presence of love, bringing forward the active presence of love. Not, oh, well, I learned I have to go off and do this on my own. That's more of the nobody's there for me. That's more of that early childhood event that needs to be healed so that you can move into interdependent relationship where there is total connectedness, communication, and reliance on support with and for and from another human being, but where there is no hostility or fear involved so that we get to truly live interdependent lives as we are designed to do. You know, we've all heard the saying, no man is an island. No person could possibly. I mean, if I had to do it all on my own, I'd have to know how to make shoes. I'd have to know how to make refrigerators and stoves and cars and how to build. I'd have to know. I can't do all of that. I have to be interdependent. But if I have hostility or fear in my interdependence, that's when I move into codependence. And so the antidote for codependence is really, truly arriving at a space where love is present and there's interdependence in my life with anyone and everyone that I connect with.
Yeah, I think I moved from one fold to another, you know, codependent to total independence, and neither of them, you know, because then I find that, you know, yeah, I'm trying to do everything myself. I don't have any, you know, I'm just alone. So
Yeah, neither of them is healthy.
No, no.
Yeah.
And so it's, yeah, it's that interdependence. So, okay. So I have...
Good breath. There. Did you catch that breath that just moved in you spontaneously?
Yeah.
Hey, when you go back and listen to this particular moment and just catch the breath that moved. That's the breath. That's the still point breath. That's where the breath moves, and that's where the healing is. That's where that veil of the unconscious is opened, and that unconscious content now is being released. That's exactly where it happens. That's the energy of it.
Okay.
And it just comes spontaneously. It's not something we... You can say, well, I'm going to breathe, and that'll do it. It's where I'm energetically prepared to let that veil open in me, that barrier between the subconscious and the unconscious open. Forgiveness does that. The breath does that. And that breath that just moved is what moves the energy.
Yeah, so what I'm seeing now is that the first two goals that I need to cancel that I write down are really just – the two poles that I was talking about. The first one
yes.
is the need for someone to be there for me. The second
yep.
one is the need to be able to handle this on my own.
Exactly. And then, you know, variations on a theme. Again, when Yeshua said 77 times 70 times, there might be another dozen goals that will lead you to just watch as you cancel each one, be very mindful of what moves in you and catch the subtlety of the thoughts that come. What's the next piece that I need to unwind here to free my whole physiology from that? And as far as on a physiological level, it sounds like there's some energy that needs to be moved. And, you know, there's a device you've probably heard us talk about before called an Evison that is about opening microcirculation. And if you'd like, I'll contact you and we can arrange for you to try one out if you want to test one and see if it changes what's happening with your circulation.
Okay. Yeah, I've heard of it. Susan has one, and she's mentioned it.
Right. Cool. Well, if you'd like, I'll give you a call. We're down. The show's going to cut us off in just a moment or so.
Okay.
And so if there's more process work to be done around this, let's start the show out with it tomorrow, and let's move to the next level. We'll hold the space and see full healing happening here.